We're here at B2B Forum by Marketing Profs, and I'm here with Samantha. So how are you doing?
Excellent. I love this show. It really is my favorite conference of the year.
Yes. When we decided to come back, and you know, as soon as the speaker sessions, you know, opened up for submitting, I threw mine in. And it's like, I don't care what I talk on, you know, just let me talk. I want to come back. It's such a great show. It's intimate. You get access to the speakers, and it's just good conversations.
Yeah, you know, it strikes me as there's a lot of great content, as there are in a lot of places. It tends to be a little bit more practical than some of the other conferences, which I really enjoy. But there's something about the attendees here that they really want to find relationships that they can learn from and have fun. And it's probably a result of the personality of the people running the conference.
Yeah.
But it seeps through, and I just love it.
It is. It's very welcoming to practitioners. So it's, if you're a B2B marketer, this is a great place to come and feel home with other people and really throw those ideas off, not just with the influencers, but with others who are in like brands or, you know, similar issues.
You start figuring out how to use all these ideas that you're starting to talk about.
Yeah, so you're doing a lot here. So you have book signing tomorrow. What's the book about?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'm super excited that Unleash Possible is coming out in conjunction with this conference. It's not a coincidence. It was planned that way. And really what the book is about is it's a marketing playbook for driving sales. So it talks about marketing, but it doesn't just talk conceptually about what to do. There's a little bit of theory, but it's mainly a case study, how-to guidelines, and it's a lot of focus on having to collaborate with sales to drive better results. So we talk about what things should we measure. We talk about how do you have true buyer insights. So we know we need to do personas. But how do you actually do them? So this steps you through everything you need to know. As an example, we talk about account-based marketing. How do I know if it's right for me? Once I determine it's right for me, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. And so the book really takes you in depth how to think about these things and these ideas for your actual organization.
Exactly. And you know, like marketing as a department is relatively new, and it usually fits under either IT or sales. And so you'll see the VP of sales and marketing, or the VP of IT and marketing. And when you have those organizations that are underneath IT, there's a major need to actually have more integration with sales, because marketing is really the most connected of all of the departments, I think.
It's actually interesting to say that. One of the observations I have is the companies where sales and marketing are actually together almost counterintuitively have the opposite problem. There's usually a dominant force. So if the person leading up that had a heritage in sales, they're very sales-centric in how they think. The person leading that had a heritage in marketing, they're more focused on the marketing component of it. So in some ways, I actually like organizations that marketing has its own independent organization, because we can help be a driver for the company, and we can help set insights and help make decisions and do things in a way that isn't biased to one or the other. But regardless of where it sits, whether it's in IT, whether it's in sales, whether it's independent, marketing cannot succeed without sales, and sales can't succeed without marketing in B2B, right? In these complex environments that we work in. So we talk about this for decades. I'm old enough to remember a little more than a decade of actually talking about this. We're not nearly making the progress that we should be. And I think there's some real basic things that the book explores to help us overcome that and to get back to finding ways to integrate, not just in an org chart, but actually integrate in a productive way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the gap in progress that we've seen in marketing, especially digital marketing, the fact that we're still talking about the homepage, and we're still talking about web content, and we're still talking about, you know, articles and blogs, seriously. I mean, this is a conversation we've been having for 16 years. But technology, devices, and the customer have all evolved, and they all have changed. And yet we're still trying to figure out how to talk to each other and how to adapt. So I think it's critical now. And I think that's why you're seeing more authors like David Meerman Scott with his selling book, and with John Jans and his duct tape selling, right? The idea of saying, okay, it's time to come together. And the solution sales and the other side of the sales world, they're all looking for some way to reach the customer before they're ready for the sale. So I love to see that you have that marketing side to say, it's not just a marketing book for salespeople, it's a collaboration.
Yeah, and it's really critical because in reality, in B2B organizations or any complex sale, even if it's not necessarily B2B, we are measuring sales. They're held accountable for one thing only, and that's revenue of closed business. And buyers don't buy that way anymore. And so until we hold sales accountable for the entire buyer's journey along with marketing, we can't actually solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And so there are, and one of the things I'm going to be talking about this afternoon, or how do we set service level agreements up with sales so that we can really truly partner from the beginning of that relationship with a buyer to when they become hopefully an advocate, not just a customer. And we have to dramatically change how we measure and reward salespeople for that to actually become a scalable reality.
Absolutely. Because it can't just be the close of the business. It has to be the execution on the business. It can't just be the source of the lead. It's got to be the lifetime of that lead. So absolutely, it is weird to have this. It's almost like a cook and a waitress scenario, right? Where they're based off of tips, and that's their salary range, and they're based off a salary, and yet they're supposed to work together to provide an amazing experience.
That's a great analogy. And at the end of the day, you only get the meal served when both people are actually coordinated. If I cook the meal and it sits under red lights because the waitress doesn't come back to pick up the food on time, the buyer gets a cold meal or an incomplete meal.
Exactly. If I'm lazy and I put olives in it, then the waitress gets hit by the tip.
That's right.
And so you have to have a coordinated team, but there's always that financial burden between the two of them that says, if I hand you a lead, you're going to get commission on this. You're going to be able to take your kids to Hawaii while I'm looking at Six Flags, right? The other way around, it's like, hey, I am desperate. I need leads. I need to pay for my mortgage because my salary is completely based off of commissions. And you guys aren't working hard to help me get these leads, to help warm things up. So it's a vicious cycle.
It is. And one of the things that's ironic is the more and more work I research I do, the more clients I work with, the more of my own work that I do, I realize leads is almost never the answer, because we actually don't want more leads. What we want is more opportunities. And I worked with a client a couple years ago, and they specifically hired me to increase lead volume. It was in the statement of work. And I came in hesitant to accept that criteria, but I was willing to play along. And I got in and I did an assessment, and it became really clear to me volume leads was not their problem. It was quality. And I sat the CEO down and stepped in through my research, and I looked him in the eye and I said, we're cutting leads by 50%. And his jaw dropped. He's like, I hired you to increase lead volume. And I said, wait, you know, hold on, but we're going to increase opportunities as a result of the changes we're making. And within 6 months, we had cut the leads by 50%. We had maintained a budget flat, so we didn't increase our spend, but we had grown revenue 25%. And it was because we took a quality versus a quantity approach, even though coming into the problem, they thought what they needed was more leads.
Yep. And yeah, and you see, you know, it's because the CRM, the software is built to take us through an assembly line. Well, I'm sorry, customers don't buy like that anymore, right? Talking to somebody about a new widget. Well, if they just bought the widget last year, you have to let that thing go down or the CFO is never going to approve it. And so things have become opportunities then need to sit and go and say, okay, they're going to be ready next year. Let's pull that out of our opportunity view, right? And people are like, no, I have to have a lot of active opportunities or I don't feel safe at night. And it's like, no, nurture the ones that you have, engage with the customer, ensure that you have their entire problem understood, and figure out how to interact with them and use your marketing team to help produce some amazing interactive content.
We've trained ourselves to need 3 or 4x pipeline. And we, in our meetings and in our strategy, we actually sit down and we think about how do we get to 3x or 4x? When what we really want to do is how can we get 2x conversion rate? And if we apply that same energy and that same focus to needing a lower conversion rate, and that's by focusing on real buyers and the right people, it's by maybe changing some of what we offer. There's a whole host of things that we can do to affect that conversion rate. We're far more efficient as a business if we can do that, as opposed to let's just increase everything we throw at the top because we have to have 3 or 4x, or some businesses, I've seen businesses even tell me 5x, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. But then it also brings up some interesting points on the other side, because marketing, you're not, you know, flawless in this situation.
Correct.
Because there is that scenario where you didn't come back and pick up the food. So when it comes to strategy, and that's one of the things that you're really passionate about, why are marketers still failing on the writing the damn thing down, right? Do we not know where word is, right? Do we not know how to write 800 words? Like, seriously, if I just say, I want you to write an 800-word article, okay, on what? Content strategy. Okay, what should I write about? Yours. And then all of a sudden it's like frozen up and walk away. It's like, no, I can't.
It's remarkable how much we don't document our content strategy. We don't document our personas. We don't even document our data cleansing processes. Half of organizations don't even have a shared lead definition, which is mind-boggling to me. And we don't do it because we are so busy measuring ourselves on activity and not impact that it becomes another thing I have to do. The organizations who take the time, and you know this, who actually stop doing something else, because to document it, we have to stop doing something else.
Yes.
The ones who do that in the long run are far more successful. But I think we don't because it's painful in the short run. I have to not go to a meeting this week. I have to say, no, we're not going to sponsor that conference. I have to say no to things. And as marketers, we've trained ourselves to think of ourselves as service to the business. So we want to say yes. And when we're asked to do something, I need another data sheet. I need another presentation. I need. And the answer is never, I need more collateral. No matter what the question is, it is never, I need more collateral. I promise that's never the answer.
And nobody's looking at your website going, there's no blog this week, right? What's going on? I need this blog. I'm not buying from it ever again. Call other company number two, right?
That is such a great example, and it's true. We get lost in our own. We want schedules. We want cadence. We need predictability. But we get lost in that being the end goal as opposed to what we're trying to influence. And the only way to change that is to change what marketing is measured by. As long as marketing is measured by leads or cost per lead, this behavior cannot stop. It won't stop. We have to give that up, and we have to really measure ourselves by the same things salespeople are measured by.
Exactly. I always think back because my favorite movie in sales is not Glengarry Glen Ross. It's not. It's Tommy Boy. And it's the guarantee on the box, right?
I like your line, I like your prices, but there's a problem. There's no guarantee on the box.
Heck, if something breaks down, you can call me, even if I'm home watching TV.
Callahan has guaranteed every part sold since 1925.
Maybe so, but it's not on the box. It should always be on the box, comforting you, calling out, I'm good. I'll never let you down. But if I do, I'm going to make things all better.
And it made him feel better that there was a guarantee on the box. It was the lead, right? It's like, well, if I get a lead, I'm happy. I don't care if that lead has no idea what we do. If there's a name and a company associated, I did something well. And it's just like, you don't need the guarantee. It's the quality of what's within. Yeah, Tommy Boy is the best sales movie in the world.
That I'm going to have to go back and look at it with another lens now from the sales perspective.
Yeah, it's not just the chicken wing scene, right? It is beyond
my teenage boys might not appreciate the subtlety of the sales message, but they certainly laugh along with the movie.
Absolutely. So what are some of the tools that you've seen? What are some of the approaches you've seen of getting people to actually get that strategy right now?
It really does start with agreeing, and this is the perfect time of year because we're going into our planning for 2017, and every company has their own very painful, long process we go through. We put budgets together. They tell us no. We go top down. We go bottom up. We do all that. But what really needs to happen is we need to sit down together in a room, and we need to really agree on what we're going to be measuring. And here's the scary part for a lot of organizations. It's probably not what you're measuring today. And so we actually have to create new baselines. And again, that takes work. I was just talking to a client last night, and I was going through, they're considering moving to an account-based marketing model. And they kept saying, well, we can't measure that, or we can measure that, but that's not what the executive team wants. And we kept going back, no, if you're moving to this model, you need to change what you're measuring, or you're going to have the same behaviors you're doing today. And we have to sit down and we have to workshop through that. Sometimes you can do that internally. Sometimes you need a facilitated process. But until you throw out what you're looking at today, we will always be in the same cycle of getting the kinds of results that we're having today. And look, We need to know how many people open an email. We need to know how many visitors come to our website, because those are tactics we want to improve on and optimize over time. But marketing should not be held accountable to those measures. We need to be held accountable to conversion. How long is it taking a buyer to go through whatever their journey is? We need to be held accountable to defining and finding that journey and making ourselves available to buyers at every stage of that process.
Absolutely. And it's so much of marketing is internal awareness. To let your sales team, to let your executives, to let your product teams, your services team know more about the customer. Hey, did you know this? Right? And sit down with, you know, like, we're a software company. So I sit down with the developers and say, hey, when you guys forget these things, this is the pain points that they have. So I do 13 things that you should always deploy, you know, and things like that, and sit down and just say, here's who they are. Here's the struggles that they're going with. Here's the pain that you're solving. Just like any good doctor, any good nurse, and, you know, anyone that's trying to help somebody alleviate pain would understand. They're not just saying, oh, throw this pill at them. What are they suffering? I don't know. Just give them a pill.
Sell the pill. That's what we sell. Give them that.
Exactly.
Your CMO just handed you a global campaign with a short deadline and the request to lead with video. You're given a team of you and, well, you. This campaign is asking for 15 videos that need to create awareness and engagement across multiple online destinations, drive demand and lead gen, and measure performance. Whew, calm down. Everything's going to be okay. We've got you covered. First things first, we're going to set you up with Video Marketing Suite, which will allow you to access everything you need from a single online location. And it's made for marketers, so you can easily run your campaign yourself. With just a couple of clicks, your videos are uploaded, automatically optimized to work across all screens and devices. You can distribute to your social channels to reach audiences where they are, and then drive them back to a customized branded video portal using Gallery, which you can create quickly, easily, and in multiple languages. For live events, Brightcove offers an easy-to-use live streaming interface, and after you're done streaming, trim the video and post it on demand for people who missed the event. We'll even help you create interactive elements to optimize video for lead generation. To make sense of all this, our analytics platform tracks a number of statistics in an easy-to-use UI. This data feeds into leading marketing automation platforms. You can see who watched and for how long, and what other content they consumed. Then you know what to create and who it's for. We're Brightcove. We'll help ensure that your video marketing is a success.
But I do like that approach of taking time to settle and to look at those measurements. What are some of those numbers outside of page views and some of these things that we got to get away with that people could consider?
I think I really look at sort of four metrics that I advise clients on, and it'll vary a little bit by your business and where you are and your maturity, whether you're launching a brand new product or you have existing customers, you're growing, or all those kinds of considerations. But I want to not, I don't care how many leads there are. What I care about is how many leads turn into meetings. How many, you know, how well are we at identifying the right people who need our stuff? And then how well are we communicating our value to them, so to get them to the next stage? I want to look at the stages a buyer goes through. Now, look, it's not linear. I'm not going to pretend it is, but I draw it on the board linear because we need some framework to go by. So let's identify where people are, and let's start to measure the number of days that people are in that cycle or accounts are in those cycles. And let's look to shorten that ultimately. And we can't shorten it if we're not measuring it. The third thing is marketing needs to own win rate right along with sales. Marketers tend to be afraid of that statistic. Early in my career, I was hands off. Don't make me responsible. That's completely a sales skill, right? I queued it up. If they don't close it, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
But that's really not true, because we as a business need to close that business. And so we have to be responsible for win rate, not just in aggregate, but looking by competitor, by stage, by geography, by product, whatever those segmentations are that we need to look at that are relevant for us. And then the last one is really advocacy. How well are we serving our customers and helping them transition not only to paying us and renewing, but actually becoming external advocates? And there's a number of things you can look at, things like referrals, you can look at case studies, all kinds of things that we can look at But those four metrics are far more meaningful. Now, underneath those, the individual people running programs measure 100 things. But what marketing reports up to their board and what marketing is reporting and sharing with the whole company is that broader sets of metrics that really measure more about how the business is progressing than how marketing is progressing.
And I think, yeah, we, being in that silo, we can isolate ourselves and measure based off of either feel good things or, you know, like you said, these leads, these views, these things that really don't matter in the end, that don't actually show any intent or any engagement. So here's the question. So we had a very deep conversation that went all over the place. How scared are you for kids coming out of college today in the preparation for these types of topics?
You know, it's super timely that you asked that question. My 18-year-old just started his freshman year of college. And the simple answer to the question is, I worry, but not as much as what I think people worry about. And I think, because I look back and I think, was I really any better prepared coming out of college than today? And then the answer is, I had no real world experience. I wasn't. I learned as I went. Having said that, however, we were, when Nicholas was looking at programs, now he happens to want to be a mechanical engineer, not a marketer.
Oh, that's
so
good.
He's going to a technical
good
school.
Choice.
But he had a lot of options. And we were very careful to select a 5-year program, because because it had a whole year of work experience. And I think we need to transform education to be much more hands-on, not just for technical fields like engineering where it feels more natural, but for all of our disciplines. We need to be doing it at the high school level and at the middle school level and everything. We need to learn how to communicate. And one of the things that forget college, I think I'm terrified marketers are losing, is the ability to do qualitative research and to have a conversation which gives us insights data can't. Data's amazing. We have come so far and we have so much further to go. It tells us what, but it doesn't tell us why. And we get the why, and we see kernels of things when we sit across from each other or get on the phone with each other that we can't learn in other ways. And I'm afraid we're losing that in how we're training new marketers when they come on board. Everything is about the metric. And if I can't measure it, we therefore don't do it. We don't put money on it. We don't put people on it. And that to me is really dangerous.
Yeah. I just think that, I don't know, something about going to school, it's like, think of that as a part-time job, and you need to think of either you're going to have another part-time job or you're going to have another full-time job. What are you going to do to continue to educate yourself? If you have a sales job because you got to pay for school and you got to pay for your car payment, interact with the customer, right?
Yes.
Go out and try to improve something in the company. Ask the boss if you could do something. Do something that is marketing for them. Or whatever line it is, go out and, like you said, just go out and do the work. I mean, I went to a 3-year school. We went all year round. I had a full-time job the whole time in the field. And so by the time I was done, 20, right, I'm like, I'm graduated. I got my degree. I've been a full-time developer for 3 years. Like, there was never a moment of, like, I finally made it, or this is a change in my life. It's like, I just stopped going to school at night and at 6 a.m. and now I just go to work. And so now I have more time to learn. And I think if you could think of the education that way, and don't let yourself be surprised when you get to your role. If that's your passion, that's your goal in school, is to not be surprised when you land a gig, then I think you're going to be much better.
I think that's really good advice. I think, and that applies when we're in school, whether we're in graduate programs, whether just early in our careers. We have to be finding ways to continually learn and to be open and to asking good questions. I was just at the office hours earlier today, and a young man, I think he was a year out of college, this is his first marketing conference. And I have to give him a huge amount of credit, because he spent, it sounded like an hour, basically going to every one of the experts who's in this and just talking. He didn't have a real agenda. He just wanted to say, here's who I am. This is what I'm doing. What do you do? And he listened. And I think we need to help our college students and our young professionals learn how to do that in a relatable way that that informs and grows themselves.
Today, real time is the only time that counts. To stay relevant, you have to stay ahead. Your customers want the right information, right now, wherever they are. So how do you meet the demands of today's customers? By marketing in context. Context accounts for a customer's interaction with your brand. So each touch builds on the next, creating more meaningful experiences for your customers. At Sitecore, we call this context marketing. To do it well, you need marketing technology that has three things: contextual intelligence, content management, and omni-channel automation. Contextual intelligence gives you the information you need about your consumers, so the content you manage is more relevant and is automatically delivered wherever your customers are. The Sitecore Experience platform was built for context marketing, so you can create a more personalized customer experience. Demand more from your marketing technology. Demand more from marketing. Own the experience. Sitecore.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for your time. And if you had any parting thoughts for people who are considering a conference next year and they're looking in the fall, why would you say come here?
It's an excellent question. I think I said at the beginning, this really is my favorite conference of the year. And it's my favorite conference for three reasons. One is there is a lot of practical application that you learn here. So if you are going to a conference only to be inspired and to have the biggest of keynotes and things, there are other places that might be well suited. But if you want to come to be inspired by people who do this for a living and actually implement the things that they talk about and are actually marketers each and every day, the conference does a phenomenal job of doing that. I also think that the attendees and the staff are the most welcoming of any place. And I always joke when I travel that New England has a reputation for being a little stodgy and a little maybe stuck up sometimes and maybe not as friendly as you think. Marketing Prof B2B conference to me sort of completely breaks that mode. I almost feel like I'm in the South. Everybody is nice and helpful and really sincerely wants to engage and learn from each other. And those are special attributes. I go to a lot of conferences. I learn a lot at a lot of them. I meet interesting people. But that combination, I don't see anywhere else.
Once you go out and you take a left on the road, then it all comes back.
Then but you better be a Red Sox
exactly.
fan.
Exactly. And then you're going to start to get the horn honked. Yesterday, we had a guy pulling up so close, it kept setting off the sensor. And so
welcome to driving in Boston.
Like, yeah, exactly. 2.5 hours later, we're here. Yay. But it is an amazing conference. And like you said, it's just very friendly. And all the speakers are approachable. I mean,
yes.
Everyone is just open and excited about learning. It's one of those places that I've been to conferences where I've been so excited I wanted to get back and work, and it's like day one. Here it's like a blend of I'm excited to get back into work, but I don't want to leave. So I can compartmentalize it, I can put it away, I can write it down, and then move on to the next thought.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your time today,
thank
and we
you.
Can't wait to actually read the book.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really looking forward to sharing with everybody tomorrow.